coming up with the best solution for the visual problem is always going to be your best bet. And if you lose the job, you lost it because the other company thought through the solution in a much different way.
Hi, I'm Joel Pilger, and you're listening to episode 62 of the Rev Thinking Podcast. Today, our guest is Carolyn Hill, president at Carolyn Reps, and our topic is the sales translator.
Welcome to Rev Thinking, the podcast for creative entrepreneurs who know the best way to deal with the future is to create it. This is the conversation between creative leaders and consultants, discussing what it really takes to run a thriving creative business.
Hi from Colorado. I am back in the home office, one of the multiple offices from which we RevThink consultants work. Hard to believe I was gone for almost a month, but it's good to be back and good to be back with you here on the RevThinking podcast. Very much looking forward to today's episode with Carolyn Hill. Carolyn is the president at Carolyn Reps in New York City. And if you're like a lot of owners, you probably think, man, I would love to have a great sales rep, because every owner thinks he or she has a sales problem. So what about you? Do you think you have a sales problem when it comes to getting your production company, your studio, your agency out there in the world? You think, man, if somebody could just do sales for me, that would be amazing. That would be the dream. Well, let's just say you are not alone, because every owner thinks they have a sales problem. And you probably have said to yourself on occasion, or to your partners, you know, we need a rep. We need a salesperson. And maybe that's true, but maybe not. So stay tuned and listen to what Carolyn has to say. It's going to be awesome. Let me first mention, we have two sponsors this week on the podcast. Very cool. Yes, our first sponsors who are backing what we are doing here on the RevThinking podcast. So for the first time, I'm proud to say, we want to welcome the Alliance of Content and Design Companies. That is ACDC. This is the organization that is being formed. It's helping member studios and production companies thrive by forming common industry standards, sharing legal resources, and building a supportive community. You can learn about ACDC by going to theacdc.com. We're big, proud fans of ACDC and what that organization is becoming. Also, another sponsor, Buttons. Now, this is a network of digital innovators dedicated to inventing new ways to deliver sound as well as post-finishing that pushes the envelope of technology. Buttons is at 45th Street in Manhattan. Rich and his team at Buttons were kind enough to help us produce today's episode. Okay, a few announcements before we get into our conversation with Carolyn. First of all, Cohort, the quarterly cohorts of creative entrepreneurs. Our next gathering, dinner, will be February 21st in Los Angeles with our featured guest, Lucas Aragon at ABC Television. The topic is going to be The World Needs Your Creative Leadership. Lucas is awesome. You're going to love him. And March 7th is New York with, guess what? Carolyn Hill from Carolyn Reps. And we're going to talk about why you don't need a rep. Go to revthink.com/events for more info on those events. Also, Jumpstart, my accelerator. Very cool that a bunch of studios jumped in this week from New York, from Austin, Detroit, and even from as far away as Sydney, Singapore, and London. And if you know me, this gets me going. It's going to be a small group of owners of up-and-coming studios pushing their studios to the next level in just 8 weeks. And I am going to be their co-conspirator on this journey. It's going to be awesome. Go to revthink.com/jumpstart if you're curious. Also, Confab, this is the weekly forum with RevThink. We just launched this a couple weeks ago. It's exclusively for alumni of the Jumpstart Accelerator, and it's going great. If you're an alumni and you want to get involved, go to revthink.com/confab, C-O-N-F-A-B. Last week, we got into the nitty-gritty of the splits. We had Tim Thompson, Jason Fletcher, both consultants from RevThink, talking all about how do we organize our finances in a creative company so that we can have bulletproof profits. It was cool. And we walked through all the spreadsheets and all of the numbers and the nitty-gritty stuff that even makes my head spin. So thank you, Tim and Jason. Digital Design Days, Business Edition. This is a conference coming up in 6 days from now. And I'm speaking there in Geneva, Switzerland. Now, this is a 3-day event uniting the world's best creative and business minds to grow business through digital design thinking. That sounds like fun. So it's keynotes and workshops, digital installations, networking, and of course, parties. One of my favorite things. The dates are February 11th through 13 in Geneva. I'll be there. Don't miss it. If you're in Europe, you got to come. The info web address, go to ddd.ge, as in triple D.Geneva. Okay, let's get to today's podcast. Who is Carolyn Hill? Well, look, Carolyn is president at Carolyn Reps. Okay, so what that means is Carolyn and her team are the experts at solving tough problems to win top projects for production companies and studios. Simple enough. So since 2001, her clients have been awarded well over $100 million in projects. Yes, I think I just literally said $100 million in projects, including campaigns for United Airlines and the Olympics, Dunkin' Donuts, Abilify. She's famous for the Nasonex B campaign. Spiriva, did I pronounce that right? The Rosie the Elephant campaign. Carrabba's, many more. So Carolyn has represented such notable production companies and studios as Bark Bark. Hey, Brian was on the show just the previous episode. Blind, my friend Chris Doe out there in Los Angeles, he's been on the show. Curious Pictures, Derby Content, Noble Animation, Pogo Pictures, the Production Service Network, PSN, Seville Productions, and Sound Lounge. I could go on. Now, let me just say this. If you love what Carolyn has to say about sales, please listen all the way through the end of this podcast, because towards the end, Carolyn and I started brainstorming about this idea of, hey, what if we put together some sort of an event where we could help a small group of owners and their sales teams master all of these concepts? And anyways, if it's something you're interested in, if you would like to join Carolyn and me and some other experts for like a one-day event, we would love to hear from you so you can join in and get all of her sales mojo. All right, that's the intro. Sorry for all of the details. There's just a lot going on. But hey, that's what it's all about. It's exciting. 2019 is off with a bang. All right, I hope you enjoy my conversation with Carolyn Hill. Well, I've been looking forward to this conversation because, let's see, when did you and I first start chatting about having you on a podcast? I think it was a couple months ago.
Yeah, I talked to Tim originally at Promax, and that was last year, I'm pretty sure. Or was it 2 years ago? No, it was last year.
Yeah, don't say 2 years ago, because then I'm going to freak out.
Don't freak out.
Well, Carolyn, it's great to chat with you because I think of you as somebody that, full disclosure, I think I even remember pursuing you as a rep back when I ran my studio and production company, which is now, I guess, 4 years since it was acquired.
Yeah.
And just to be totally honest, I didn't quite rate your level. So I'm sure you were very polite and like, hey, thanks, but no thanks, or whatever it was.
I hope I was nice.
No, I'm sure you were. But I can remember as an owner, I was always sort of in the habit of reaching out to the really killer reps because I thought, God, I just want to know these people. I don't know that I'm ready to be represented at that level, but I thought it would always be good to get to know you. But now that I've gotten acquainted with you over these past, 9 months, it's been so fun to understand your world better. So let's introduce everyone else that might be listening to that world. And I'll just start by asking this. What the heck does a rep do really?
I think it's an excellent question because what it used to do and what it does now are like two totally different things. Mm. In the olden days, reps were basically what we called real carriers because the way that information was disseminated was not online. Okay, so it was a static piece of equipment that had to be hand carried a lot of times over to the people who needed to see the reel or the work. I'm not old enough to be doing 16 millimeter, but I do remember 3/4 inch tapes.
Yeah.
So when the internet first came up, producers would say to me, oh, it's going to just, it's going to eliminate your job. But it's actually done the exact opposite. And I had this conversation, I think, last week with someone very high up at one of the cable companies, we call them that. Yeah, cable companies, who runs multiple channels. And she said to me, I logged into the such and such site and oh my God, all the reels look the same. Help me. I don't know what I'm looking at. Help. So because this person and I have a lot of the same tastes and we have a lot of the same history, she trusted me to kind of go through and say, well, I would look at this or I would look at that. And in that situation, I didn't even actually represent anything that she was talking about. I was just trying to help her look through the information. So that's what the job is now. It's looking through the information and matching people. And when I mean matching people, I mean taking a kinds of temperaments and aesthetics that artists have and matching them with the right clients. So I'm trying to interpret, I'm like interpreter. I take what the artist does, I interpret it, and then I bring it to corporate America. So I kind of walk both of those lines.
Well, I think there's a, I'm curious to hear more about why, what really changed in that nature of, you called it, we used to be reel carriers, meaning almost like mail carriers, right? You would actually have 3/4-inch tapes and DVDs under your arms and you would walk across town. And because I think there's this, maybe a fantasy isn't too strong of a word, that some studio owners and production companies, they think that if I could just have one of my DVDs or my website under Carolyn's arm, if I just quote, get on her roster, then the rest is just going to happen. But clearly it's shifted over the years. Was it ever like that? I mean, it's certainly not that way now.
You know what? I think a long time ago when there were maybe like you could name the 10 to 12 studios that existed, I think it sort of worked like that. Just because of the amount of work that was out there versus the number of people available to do it. And the thing is, as the equipment has become less expensive, as schools are, you know, spitting out these multi-talented people that can do everything, direct, animate, shoot, edit, you know, they're totally multi-talented. They also are photographers or whatever it is. It's changed what the business has become because of what's available. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So it was like that a very long time ago, but it is definitely splintered into factions now where it's not like that at all. And what happens is that the buyers in the market become overwhelmed with information, and then they're looking for these trusted sources to go to just for basically consultation to say, this is the type of project I have. This is what I'm looking for. What do you recommend? Now, much to my own detriment, I have frequently recommended people, companies, and whatever that I don't represent at all, but that I respect or know are the right skill set for the person who's asking me. But what happens is that because I have such a long history of doing that, like 20 plus years, the clients who do come to me and ask me what to do about their projects, they pretty much show me almost everything they do because they know I'm not going to give them a biased opinion. And in a lot of times, the person I'm talking to, I've done hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars worth of work with. And that also changes things drastically because it changes the way the conversation goes because they'll tell me if they like what I've sent or if they react to what I'm sending. So this goes back to what you and I talked about also about lead lists and whatnot. Like, for example, there's a producer I know really, really well, and she asked me for these specific live action reels, and I sent her 5 from my roster. I said, okay, what do you think of these? And she was super kind, and she watched everything carefully, and she wrote me right back and said, I don't like this aspect of the reels. What do you have that's more in line with this sort of storytelling? And I said, you know what? I didn't send you this one thing because I didn't think it was right for your job, but why don't you look at this reel? And of course, she looked right at it and was like, this is perfect. I like this. And I was like, oh, okay, there you go. Because the thing is, you're trying to interpret a visual medium using words, which is very difficult. And when you try to do that, and then you're even putting it through the filter of email, I mean, oh my God, forget it.
Well, I love what you're saying because I would love for you to unpack something.
Sure.
Because you're reminding me, I had a conversation months ago with Blair Enns, he's the Win Without Pitching CEO.
Yep.
And we were both talking about how the nature of sales in the creative industries has really changed over the past 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, principally because of Google and LinkedIn.
Yes.
And, you know, Vimeo, YouTube, and so forth. But here's what we agreed was that in the old days, or you call them the olden days.
The olden days.
I love that. It's adorable. I remember those days, but I call them the glory days. But in those days, there was a certain, you know, a really good salesperson, and I'm guessing this is true of reps. You could do a certain amount of like, if, as long as I make enough calls and I take enough meetings, I show enough reels, the work just shows up. But now, because everyone has access to everyone, the sales process has shifted and it's now a lot more consultative. Because I heard you say that word a second ago, that that your clients reach out to you as a consultant. And I thought, that's so interesting, because most people don't think of the sales process as a consultative process.
Yeah.
But I find that to be very true. And the situation you just walked us through was very much that, that it was this very slow and methodical process that you're walking somebody through. And I also hear that if you don't have the perfect fit on your roster, you're still happy to recommend and refer, because at the end of the day, you're a consultant. So you're here to solve the problem, whether or not the person is on your roster. Because if you can share your expertise and build that trust, that's everything.
Absolutely. And, I mean, this is the whole thing, is you have to be obsessed with the business. And I am one of those people, I can't help it. I have to know, and I'm obsessed with the business. And the thing is, when you have that level of knowing credits for 20 years and you can pull out information very quickly, then you can kind of help the producer understand where you're coming from by using those frame of references. You know, there's certain things that we get, Amanda and I, my coworker, you know, I'd say every other week, if not once a week, things like the Minority Report, where Tom Cruise is standing in a room and he's moving the graphics around. I mean, that's a reference I get all the time. Or the introduction to Mad Men, or, you know, there are all these things that are like the pillars of like, well, I want it to look like this, you know, and then insert name. It could be Spike Jones. I got that like, yes, on Friday. Like, I mean, you know, there are always those certain points of reference. But if you know what those points of reference are and you know who those vendors are off the top of your head, then it's very quick for you to be able to say, oh, yes, I understand. Okay, you're talking about a flat 2D with a little bit of, you know, After Effects. Okay, let me get something. So that's the thing, is a lot of times you'll get a call that's so broad, it's ridiculous. Things like, I need animation. Okay. What are you talking about? You know, and sometimes they mean 2D and they don't understand. Sometimes, you know, we get a lot of Pixar references, obviously. But then you show them exactly what they ask for and it's like, oh, no, that's not what I was thinking at all.
Well, I love that you used that other term earlier when you said I'm a translator. Because you're taking these somewhat vague or nebulous or whatever terms about a project and you're translating them and saying, wait, by that, do you mean? And maybe you should think about, so I'm curious. I think there's also this misunderstanding when we talk about you being a translator, that maybe a lot of studios and production companies think that the decision of an award for a job, of course, it comes down to who has cool creative or has the aesthetic that the client is looking for. I would actually love to hear you describe how that is perhaps one aspect that's very important.
Yeah.
But there's all these other dimensions.
There are.
Of why a deal comes together that has perhaps little to do with the creative or the aesthetic.
Sometimes, yes.
Yeah, sometimes, what are those other dimensions?
Well, right now it's people preserving their job. So you could have an amazing treatment from a brand new director who's maybe been, you know, or animator who's been maybe working 1 to 2 years, and there's just no way you're going to get the job over said very established award-winning, you know, animation company, production company.
Right.
There's just no way.
So trust is a big variable.
Yes. They want to be able to go to the layers above them and say, but I hired so-and-so who won, you know, 2 Emmys and has done blah, blah, blah. And if you don't have that reference of fill in the blank, you know, then you got nowhere to go. So sometimes I can see what's happening with the agency or the client just based on who's involved with the bid, which is why we usually ask who's involved with the bid. Because if you're coming in and you're up against some of the really big studios, and like, for example, if you're going to be doing stop motion and you're up against Aardman, I'm going to tell you right now, that's a hard slog.
Mm-hmm. Of course, because that and they're not just awarding or considering someone like an Aardman simply because their work is great. That's sort of table stakes, right? There's a lot more that goes into that name and why they might hire them.
Absolutely. So anytime you've got, you know, Oscar caliber work, it's going to be a hard slog. Doesn't mean it can't be done, but it makes it more difficult because there are all these other things like PR and awards. And do people know the name of your company? Have they heard the name of your company? Have you worked on brands they've heard of? It also depends on what area you're selling to. Is this overseas? Is it US? Is it New York? New York being by far the hardest because New York, they want to see nationally known brands by nationally known people that people know nationally. And if you don't have that, don't send it. Now, on the other hand, those are going to be generally for like the big broadcasts. You know, we're coming off the Super Bowl, so I'm all in my Super Bowl head. But, you know, as one of my EPs pointed out to me today when we were just talking about this, it's like, yeah, but remember, they have all this other content they have to do and da-da-da. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's very true. So strangely enough, the way that the internet has evolved and the way we use it for communications has actually meant that there is actually more work out there. Mm-hmm. Which is better for everybody because they now the brands or channels or shows or whatever it is that you're creating for, they need visuals for Instagram or in Facebook and their website and maybe like, you know, B2B type stuff. I mean, I'm doing very well with B2B communications right now that are visually driven that nobody's ever going to see.
Oh, I love the B2B game because some of these, yeah, because some of these studios or production companies almost go in an agency-esque sort of offering, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they can create really amazing engagements. So let me ask this question because I think back there when you were talking about the credentials, So if you're competing, if you're on Carolyn's roster and you're competing against a big name like an Aardman or something, the client, the agency, whatever, they're asking questions like, well, what awards have you won? Have you done these national spots? Have you, you know, have you worked with these types of brands?
Yes.
And I know people listening, when they hear that, they go, oh, just give me a chance. Just give me a shot and I'll be able to do that too. And clearly there's a chicken and an egg conundrum here because people listening think, well, I don't have that level of work, but if you represented me, then we would, and then it'll all just fall into place. But I think that's a gross oversimplification.
It is, because what you would get are the ancillary projects that come in that are like these strange, quirky, you know, the supportive material for these larger brands or shows that, you know, you're not sure where it's going to run and whatnot. That's all true. But the first thing is, as a quote unquote rep myself, is that A, I'm super picky and I say no most of the time.
Yeah.
I'm a New Yorker and my first answer, no matter what you ask me, is no. If you give me a really good argument, it might get to maybe.
I love
but
that.
Even some of my best companies, one of which you know quite well, I mean, even Blind, it took them three times asking me to represent them when I finally said yes.
Yeah. Well, I love this. You're reminding me of this quote that I shared with me in London week before last from Warren Buffett.
The difference
between successful people and really successful people is that really successful people say no to almost everything.
Wow. I'm so glad that me and the sage of Omaha are feeling the same way about how business needs to proceed. I always thought it was just the New Yorker in me, but apparently in Nebraska, they think that as well.
Apparently so. You're in good company. But I love it because here's what I know. Every owner listening would admit, yeah, I have a sales problem. Okay. I don't care if I know owners that are running $40 and $50 million studios, and of course, ones that are running $400,000 a year studios. And every one of them will say, to some extent or another, we've got a sales problem. And what I think is there's this little dream or fantasy they have in their mind called, you know, I don't really understand why. And to be honest, I'm not that great at sales myself, or I don't really understand it. But if I could just have a shortcut,
yeah.
If somebody could just do that for me, that would be great.
Yeah.
And my encouragement to people is, you can't delegate that which you don't understand yourself.
Absolutely.
Why is that?
Because sales has to do with people. It's not about the word sales. It's about people. So you may feel like you saw this unknown studio that just, you know, catapulted up to the top of the list and whatnot. It's like, no, actually, they came from, you know, big company from back in the day. Or, you know, I was just talking about it with you about Colossal in San mm-hmm. Francisco mm-hmm. and how like so many people came from there. And it's like, oh my God, right. Yeah, they worked at Colossal. Okay, right. Okay, that makes sense. So then you kind of go back to this like, oh, all right, it seems like they came out of nowhere. But no, they came from, you know, one of the big companies at the time that was so successful. So therefore their client relationships with the, you know, the run of the mill agency producer at the time in the mid 2000s, now suddenly that person's ahead of production, or is that a client, or is that a gaming company? And when you're starting out, those are the people that you end up finishing with too. So you have to keep up all your relationships, which goes back to, you know, the other things about what you need to do as an owner of a company, how you're forward facing, you know, how are you forward facing?
Well, okay. So just to really drill home what you just said there,
sure.
Because I think it's so key, is what I heard you saying was these studios, the production companies that seem like, oh, overnight success. Mm-hmm. Right, like they just got that Super Bowl spot, or whatever. They're on Carolyn's roster, or this other big rep's roster. Oh my God! If we could just do that, it's really easy to grossly oversimplify. When in reality, it only took that owner or that studio 10 years, perhaps, to become an overnight success.
Absolutely.
Right, and along that journey, I would submit those people were learning how to create trust, to share their expertise, how to have a very narrow point of view. And I know sales is a bit of a dirty word. They were learning how to do all of that in the context of, hey, I want to solve your problems. And that's a sales conversation.
Absolutely. Because if the clients or channels are going to spend tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars, they absolutely have to know who they're dealing with. It's mm-hmm. just key. Mm-hmm. And it can seem like somebody got a large assignment and you're just not sure. But maybe that company from back in the day came from, like, I don't know, I'm going to name companies that are no longer with us, but that spurned a lot of people, like Superfat or Curious Pictures or Motion Theory. I mean, there are great companies that people have come out of, and then they've kind of invented their own path, but they would have relationships from the 2000s or whatnot. I mean, God forbid, even the 90s, that would translate into work today because they would have a history with the people that are their clients.
So I heard you say, I say no most of the time.
Yep,
just
a lot.
Just like Mr. Buffett. Mm-hmm. And just to be clear, I'll put you on the spot here a little bit.
Sure.
Because I know some people listening are like, oh, I want to meet more people like Carolyn. Uh-huh. You don't just say no to clients and the things that are not a fit. You say no to a lot of people that reach out to you and say, hey, please, can I be on your roster? Can you take me on? Can you help me? I need sales, what have you. I know that's got to be disheartening, because you must say no all the time to these people that you're like, I wish I could help them. Does that become disheartening at times?
Yeah, it does. It's almost every day. I mean, yeah. It also depends on how they approach me. It helps a lot if they use a name or say so-and-so wanted me to meet you. That's a totally different thing, because I'd mm-hmm. at least, you know, meet with them to say, okay, what are you trying to do? And then kind of take it from there. But a cold email is definitely not the way to approach me. Now, on the other hand, if you're cold emailing me right after you just won, you know, 3 canned gold lions, sure, I'm probably going to take a look at your work and want to have a conversation.
Well, in a way, that's not truly cold anymore. This is the, how do you make a cold email at least a little bit warm, right? Through a mutual friend or some sort of a, something. Because, you know, I've seen a few of the cold emails that you get. You've been kind enough to share a few with me. But all in the spirit of helping people, because you send these people to me and you say, Joel, you really need to help these guys. Like, look how, and I mean, to be honest, like how bad of a fail this is. They're reaching out cold.
Yeah.
They don't understand how to position themselves. Mm-hmm. They clearly don't understand if this is how they reach out to clients when they're trying to do sales, like God help them.
Yeah. It's a little scary. And that's when you find out that the client side / agency side, a lot of them like don't even read their emails. They have other email accounts because they get so much spam, and the ones that they do have, you learn a lot by being close with those people. And it sometimes, I mean, a cold email could work. I'd say 1 out of 10,000. But generally speaking, unless you're sending really relevant work to exactly what they're doing, which is what I try to do, it's not really your best bet.
All right. So let's let's unpack that. I mean, that's sort of the sad story.
It is.
Let's turn a little bit of an encouragement corner here.
Yeah.
And that is, I know that you have, like, you have obviously an expertise and an understanding and a process.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering if maybe we could help anyone listening and give them a sense, just at least from a high level, like, what are some of the best practices? If I was going to, you know, if I just sent you I run a studio and I just sent you a cold email and it's atrocious, and you were going to spend a few hours or a day with me and sort of coach me through, okay, Joel, here's what you need to know.
Yep.
Are there like the 3 or 4 bullet points or something that we might be able to share with people?
Yes, absolutely. The first one is, what does your website look like? What's on your website? Do you have professional photos on your website, like of yourself or your business partners or the directors or the creative directors? Your outward facing, how professional it looks is really, really, really important. I also once had a client say to me, I was in a rush and it was really late at night and I needed to look for graphics reels. And let me tell you right now, Carolyn, can you please make sure anybody you represent like that has their montage playing on the landing page or a way for me to click on it immediately when I need to quickly kind of see what the studio's about.
Nice.
That was very good feedback from a client. Then I would just say PR so that people know the name of your company. Maybe do some online advertising. You know, we're in a marketing world. You want to participate in marketing. I would also say belonging to the organizations we brought up. We were talking earlier about Promax. Or AICP or CAN or the one club has really good events, Art Directors Club, going to events, being part of the business, trying to get yourself on those judging panels, you know, trying to be on a board, anything like that where you're participating in the business so that you're not coming to someone cold because at least they've heard the name of your company. And then I would go to what I would call, the content. So content meaning, did you win any awards? Are you doing, let's say you're not doing any award-winning work. You're doing mainly pharmaceutical or B2B. Well, what can you do to help yourself? Do personal work. And when you do personal work, then perhaps you could become a Vimeo pick of the day. Now, if someone cold emails me and it's an animator I've never heard of, and they're at least sending me a Vimeo pick of the day, there's about a 75 to 80% chance I'm going to click on the link to watch it. So getting people to watch the work and engage with your work and what you're doing is a really big part of the job.
Man, I love this stuff. I love this stuff. Okay. So what about when you start getting into some of these later stages? Because I think I just wrote down 5 points, which is really cool. Let's say when someone transitions into the, I'm now successfully moving people from unaware to aware, which we would call good marketing.
Yep.
And hopefully that's even stirring up some interest. When they start to talk with somebody who has intent, meaning there's actually a project, we do have a need, this is often where, especially the owners, they can't get out of their own way often because they're addicted to cash, or, you know, they're desperate, right? Or they're like, oh my God, I've always wanted to work for this brand. And they make some common mistakes. What do you think are some of the best practices once that conversation gets underway?
It's what are the materials you're presenting to the potential clients? And this is where how professional your organization is coming off is really, really, really important. And what I mean by that is, do you have a PDF that's like, you know, this is who the company is. Here are some photos. Here are some stills, you know, some screenshots taken out of some of the work that we've done that you might recognize. Maybe it's a show open. Maybe it's a commercial. Maybe it's B2B. Maybe it's a character you invented. I don't know, whatever it is. So is there some sort of a deck about your company that people can reference? And that's, so you have the website is one, and then some sort of a deck about the company, because your history, who you are, your bio, where you came from, anything that could make someone feel like they've got a connection to you is really important. Mm. And that could be as simple as, you know, you were born in Manhattan and maybe the client was too, or maybe you went to RISD and the client's kid goes there. Like, you just don't know. So you're trying to throw out pertinent information so that there's some sort of personal connection that can come through the information that you're providing them.
Meaning be a human being.
Exactly. Because it's all about one-on-one contact, right?
Now, when I think of myself, if I'm a buyer and I'm receiving all of that goodness that you just described, is it safe to assume that you as the seller, meaning this owner that we're pretending out there, shouldn't, like, it's not going to be about price at this point.
No.
Because this is such a, this still blows me away how many, especially firms internationally, they're behind in the sense that they think, well, we're, quote, just as good as fill in the blank, right? We're just as good as blind or something, but we're cheaper. And I always tell them, please do not say that anywhere, because that's not part of the modern sales conversation.
No.
Because really, the clients are almost picking you before that even comes up. Like, we'll get to that.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Definitely.
In your experience?
Yeah. Definitely true. And the thing is, the race to the bottom is not something you want to be involved in. Mm-mm. So, I mean, it's useful to know, are they talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars? Or are they talking about tens of thousands of dollars? I mean, the last thing you want to do is get on a call about a big VR project and it turns out they have $50,000. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's always a way to skin a creative cat. Now, on the other hand, if they have $50,000 and you think that they might be able to do some sort of installation that you'd be able to do for them, so you're offering them creative solutions. Definitely the most successful studios I've seen do this over and over again, where they take what the client needs and either can execute it so that it's exactly what the client's vision is, and that's why they get repeat business, or I've seen them steer the client into this other way, this other direction that's going to accommodate the budget better and is going to actually look better for what the goal is, for what they're trying to achieve visually. Mm.
Yeah, I was just tweeting today a line that you might appreciate that echoes that sentiment. And it was one of my accelerator graduates who was in this private group. And he was talking about, we're learning that it's better to focus on the problem, not the project.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, ooh, that's such a concise way of putting it, where, like, forget about the project for while you're in this sales conversation. What's the problem? And that's what I heard you saying is sometimes you're coming back and saying, hey, I know you asked for whatever, a 30-second spot, but what about a solution like this that actually solves your problem better? Oh, and it's going to hit your budget, blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, you as a consultant, you must do a lot of that.
Absolutely. I'll tell you, one of the ones that always made me laugh was that when back in the day when I represented Rhythm and Hughes, and we got contacted to do this project, and they wanted to make this CGI character, and we submitted a budget and did a great treatment and everything, and we lost the job because the other company we were bidding against proposed doing an in-camera solution of a puppet.
Mm. What?
And it was nothing that we ever would have thought of, because Rhythm and Hues is a big CGI company that comes up with 3D big characters, or, you know, photoreal animals at the time. So when I found out what the solution was to the company that got it, I was like, oh my God, wow. Okay. Well, they were able to take that conversation in a completely different direction, and that's why they got the job. So there you go.
So in retrospect, when you think back on that, what would you do differently the next time? Like, just be a little more consultative and think outside the box?
I think coming up with the best solution for the visual problem is always going to be your best bet. And most of the time, if you lose the job, other than if there's politics around the decision, it's usually going to be that you lost it because the other company, animator, whoever that is, thought through the solution in a much different way.
Mm. Yeah. And that obviously, for that person who wins, that's a competitive advantage that's really hard to overcome.
Definitely. Yeah. Mm. A little ingenuity goes a long way.
Yeah. So in other words, you want to be that guy that
ideally.
Yeah. That innovated and said, hey, I think the deeper problem is this.
Yes.
And this solution might. Yeah.
Yep.
That's really interesting.
Yep.
Well, I was sitting here, as you were telling that story, I was sitting here thinking about how cool it would be at some point, because I know you're a generous soul, and we've talked about how you're in this position where you really do want to help the industry start to evolve and grow and master this sales process. And I was sitting here thinking, how could I get you on stage?
Oh my.
Yeah, because, you know, increasingly what we're doing at RevThink is doing, of course, we have accelerators that are sort of online, but I know it would be really cool, I would think, for a group of owners if they could sit in a room with you for a day and actually go through all of this in a structured way.
And I think that makes a lot of sense.
Well, I mean, it's asking a lot of you, because you obviously have expertise and connections and insights and all this kind of thing that you bring first and foremost to your clients, meaning the people on your roster. But do you think someday you'll be in a position to share it with a larger audience?
Yeah, absolutely. We could just run through some of the crazy emails that I get and tell them that try not to do this. That's a full day right there.
But I was going to say, that could be like a whole, right? Like a whole Q&A of just like, okay, let's show you what not to do. And then you can ask us, well, how would you have done it, Carolyn?
Yes. I think that would be, I would love to give some feedback to definitely some of the people who've reached out to me regarding either A, email protocol, B, website issues, C, any sort of PR, not PR work. Real construction is another one. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of like, please either let me make the reel or let me tell you what please not to put on the reel, you know, the quality of what's on the reel, meaning like the resolution, that sort of stuff. There are things people are not thinking through, even if there happens to be a slate on the beginning of the spot. I mean, there's some things that you see where you're just like, oh my God, why would you send that?
Wait, what are you thinking?
Yes.
So I just was thinking too, you know, what would be fun is I would love to actually join you on that stage and preach some of this gospel that I've been preaching about. Here's how to position your firm, you know, so that you're leading with trust and expertise, not with services and commodities, all this stuff. But you and I definitely have, you know, like we have a good vibe going on a lot of these topics. It would be fun to get into all this stuff.
I think we have a lot in common about what we've seen and what we've been exposed to and what we can what we feel could actually work for someone. Yeah.
Well, and I think also you have a broad perspective on the industry, not so much just from the years, but from working with a lot of firms and a lot of clients. And that's a valuable perspective. And that's very much a part of what I'm hoping to bring to the industry as well is, yes, I've worked with, I don't know, 100 or whatever studios and firms, and I'm seeing the patterns. And I think you're also seeing the patterns. So when you and I get together, it's kind of like, ooh, you see that too? Yeah, I see that.
For sure. You
know? So now how do we get it out there and in a way that helps everyone?
One-on-one, or at least talking to the group think is good.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe we should do this. We should invite anyone that's listening that's saying, ooh, I would be down for that. Let's just put that thought starter out there and say, if you're listening and you're saying, hey, I would love to take part in whatever might come out of that. conversation. I would love to sit and, you know, spend a day under Carolyn's tutelage or something like that to get in touch with us, because maybe we can figure out a way to start giving some of this knowledge and expertise away in a small group format or something that would help people.
We totally should, because helping people present themselves in the best possible way, the most professional way, is how they are going to land more work. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we're almost 40 minutes into this chat. It went by really quickly.
Yeah, I know.
It was a lot of fun.
Oh, thank you.
Well, it's
always, thanks for asking.
No, you got it. Thanks for being so generous to share your expertise.
Oh, my pleasure.
With us. And thanks also to Rich and his team at,
yes, thank
at,
you, Rich.
At Buttons for graciously hosting the conversation on the technical side. He was quite the miracle worker at the
last
minute.
Yes, agreed.
Well, Carolyn, I'm sure I'll see you again in New York really soon, if not somewhere
else.
Yeah,
to be continued.
On one of the coasts. And then we'll just keep people posted if we can pull this, some sort of seminar or accelerator or something together. God, it's
yeah, let's pick
so...
a date. Let's do it. I would love to talk sales with people who are engaged and ready to work.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Carolyn, bye for now.
Yep, see you soon.
You've been listening to the Rev Thinking Podcast. For more information on upcoming accelerators, events, or to learn how RevThink advises creative entrepreneurs like you, connect with us at revthink.com.
I want to tell you about a place to connect that you might not know about. It's our online community called Rev Community. It's a great place to get to know other creative business owners like yourself, to share some thought leadership and read other encouragement, to be challenged in this new marketplace, new technology, ideas, economic trends. And it's a place to research. Check out many of the resources we have online, our videos, and of course, this podcast. Join us today at revthink.com/community. If you're a creative studio owner, feel free to join us today at revthink.com/community. I look forward to seeing you there.